Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. Picture the most beautiful vista on Earth in a family who's been tied to the land for generations. That place, that life, is slipping away. One family's determination to keep it alive brought Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times writer John Branch to southern Utah. From ranching to world-class rodeo riders, he chronicles the American West through the eyes of the Wright family. This hour on Point, The Last Cowboys. You can join us on air or online. Do you know the American West? The mythology, the beauty, the hardships? Are you a John Branch fan and ready to take a ride with him on this journey? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me this hour from New York City is John Branch. He's a reporter for The New York Times, and in 2013, he won the Pulitzer Prize for feature writing for the story Snowfall, about a deadly avalanche in Washington State. His new book is The Last Cowboys, A Pioneer Family in the New West. John Branch, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Thank you. Hi, Jane.
So take us to majestic southern Utah and describe this landscape that surrounds the Wright family. It's outside Zion National Park.
That's exactly right. So if you go to Zion National Park and you stand outside the western boundary of it, to the west is just wide open space. You feel like you can see to the Pacific Ocean. Just nothing but desert and arroyos. And to the east is literally the walls of Zion National Park, 3,000-foot sandstone formations right at the border of their property. There's a barbed wire fence at the base of those walls. On one side is Zion National Park. On the other side is the property that the Wright family runs cattle on.
And who are the Wrights? Introduce us to a few of the main characters from your book.
Yeah, the Wrights are a family who, going back generations, were part of the Mormon migration. Back in 1849 is when Bill's great-great-grandparents arrived in Utah. And this generation that the book is centered on is centered around Bill and Evelyn Wright. They are the patriarch and the matriarch. And they have 13 children. And seven of those children are boys. And they are all top-notch saddle bronc riders. The oldest, Cody, has won the world championship in saddle bronc riding two times. Two other brothers have won world championships, and now one of Cody's sons has won a world championship. So they are very dominant in the sport of rodeo.
Rodeo's first family, if you will.
Exactly.
What kind of access did you have to the Wright family, and how'd you find them?
Well, I found them through an old editor of mine years ago when I worked at the Fresno Bee. The executive editor there was kind of a rodeo fan. And after I left there 12 or 13 years ago and worked for the New York Times, he and I would stay in touch. And he told me about the Wright family many years ago. And so I contacted them like you do with any story and just kind of invited myself to hang out with them. And I just kept showing up again and again, both at rodeos, randomly around the West, and would sometimes jump in the truck with them or sleep in their campers in the parking lots or wherever. And then I'd show up at their ranch in Smith Mesa, which is that area outside of Zion, and was there for several brandings, which they do every year over Memorial Day. Mm-hmm. And would go to their house in Milford. They could not be more welcoming. I just kind of planted myself there at my convenience, and they just never told me to leave.
The 14th child, you know.
Exactly.
Who notices? In 2016, Rabbit Foot Studios and Yeti Presents produced a little documentary, a mini documentary about the Wright family. Here's a bit about the importance of rodeo and the cowboy image.
I don't believe there's ever been a kid grow up in the United States of America at one time or another didn't want to be a cowboy.
Just gets in your, it really does. It gets in your blood and you can't say no.
The reason why I think America loves rodeo and they're so attracted to the Western way of life is because it's the last blue-collar sport in America. If you don't perform, you don't get paid. If you don't win, the babies don't get fed.
I love that, the last blue-collar sport in America. John Branch, you write about the Wright family, their roots, their connection to the land, the cowboys, the open range, the rodeos, all of it. And you talk about how uncertain their future is. I want you to read a section from your book about that. The writing is just exquisite.
Oh, thank you. I usually try to read this out loud in my best Sam Elliott voice, but I'll spare you. I'll spare you the imitations. The West was settled and built by families like the Wrights in places like Smith Mesa, one parcel, one generation at a time, puzzle pieces that quietly filled in the vast spaces between unmarked boundaries and high skies. Americans weren't always known for their roots, but the Wrights had them planted in the red soil of Smith Mesa before the Transcontinental Railroad was connected up north, decades before Utah was an official state. They were there before the invention of the light bulb, the telephone, the car, the airplane, radio, and television. It was before Coca-Cola, the player piano, even barbed wire. "My boys will be the sixth generation to run cattle on this land," Bill said. His mouth never opened very far when he spoke. "And Cody's boys will be the seventh." Smith Mesa was a time capsule of stone and sand, and if Bill had it his way, he would pass it on to another seven generations. His long-range plan was to build the herd big enough to support his children and their children, and let them take it over if they wanted it. But Smith Mesa was blessed and cursed by rugged beauty and increasing accessibility. Like the Wrights themselves, it squatted at the intersection of the Old and New Wests. The time capsule was being unearthed. Developers were coming. Feds were circling. Conservationists were knocking. Land prices were rising. Bill was boxed in, surrounded by federal land and some private parcels that he had gotten, or that had gotten too expensive to plant a bunch of cows on. The economics of his ambitions at Smith Mesa had stopped making sense. Bill had already had some offers, some from developers looking to build on Smith Mesa, and some from conservationists looking to protect it. He had been out looking at other places, bigger places, that he could buy with the money from Smith Mesa, places farther away from the encroaching world, places like Smith Mesa used to be. More and more, he took Cody with him. "I enjoy it, too, the beauty and everything else," Bill said, "but beauty don't pay the bills." It didn't seem right that a family that had been doing the same thing for seven generations might have to move to do it for the eighth. You didn't just dust off 150 years like a day's worth of dirt.
You talk about the intersection of the old and the new West in that clip. The federal government owns 640 million acres or so of land, mainly in the West. It's about 28% of land in the United States. Remind us the relationship between the ranchers who have the federal land and those who are using it. I mean, so many of us remember Clive and Bundy and the give and take between the federal government and the ranchers. Tell us about that dynamic. It's alive and well out West.
It is alive and well out West, and especially in Utah, which, you know, in the last year or so has had a lot of news surrounding Bears Ears National Monument, for example, which the administration now has decided to shrink back down from its growth. And the Wrights are not too far from there. They've looked at land over there, and that land has made them nervous because they're not sure what's going to happen to it in the long run. Clive and Bundy, his ranch is about an hour away from where the Wrights are, down the Virgin River, down near Mesquite, Nevada. The relationship with the federal government is interesting because there is certainly a sense, and I think the headlines from the news basically tell us that people out West don't like the federal overreach, that they think the federal government has gobbled up too much of this land, and it's not in the best interest of the locals to have it in the federal hands. They think it should be under local control. But it's a lot more complicated than that. People like Bill Wright certainly have their issues with the federal government. Bill Wright leases much of his land from the Bureau of Land Management and some other land from the Forest Service. He has a love-hate relationship with those people. But he also knows that if it all went into local control, as opposed to having one jurisdiction with, say, the BLM, he might end up with five. He might end up with county governments or private landowners and maybe some federal governments. And that might make it even more complicated. So he has very much an ambivalence about what should happen. Doesn't love his landlord, but it could be worse.
So your story is one of a ranching family and a saddle bronc rodeo family. Tell us, for those of us who are not familiar with rodeo riding, what's the difference between the kinds of riding and how the Wrights fit into that bigger picture?
Yeah, so the Wrights are saddle bronc riders, and saddle bronc is the classic old rodeo sport. You know, when you wanted to break a horse, you threw a saddle on its back and rode it and tried to get it calm enough that you could use it on the ranch. And so that sport goes back a long, long ways. beyond that, there's the other rodeo sport with bucking horses is bareback riding. And that's, as the name implies, there is no saddle. And the Wrights don't normally do that. They have focused on the saddle bronc. Mm. And the other one that gets a lot of attention is bull riding. And the Wrights, for the most part, have all been bull riders as kids. But there's a little insanity to bull riding, and you don't get very old. You don't see very many old.
Yeah.
You don't see very many old bull riders. And I think the Wrights, you know, were smart enough. And Bill Wright, I think, sort of steered his kids a little bit, thinking if you want to do this long term, saddle bronc riding is probably the way to go. It's very much more, I describe it as much as more like poetry than chaos. The other two seem to be a lot more chaotic.
So rodeo and ranching, you say, are just, quote, the furniture of this story, this real life story, that the true story here, the heart of it, is about trying to keep a very unique way of life in an ever-changing world. Elaborate on that for a minute before we go to break here.
Yeah, certainly. The you know, I think we all have this image of the West, very nostalgia, filled with nostalgia and sort of dripping in sepia tones. And the Wrights and many people, I think people would be surprised to know how many people are living this life still and trying to hang on to it. But the West is changing in so many ways, and it's just kind of surrounding them. And the Wrights are figuring, what are we going to do to build our future here? And they have taken the approach that to build our future, we're going to just dig in deep on the past. And that's rodeo and ranching. We're going to make it work. We're just going to do it harder. We're going to do it better and make it happen.
We're talking with John Branch, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter of the New York Times, about his new book, The Last Cowboys. And you can join the conversation. Are you drawn to the life of cowboy, of ranching, of herding, out on the open land? Could your family be this strong? We go out with a little music from the motion picture soundtrack to the recent movie The Rider, about a rodeo driver in South Dakota. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to this podcast. If you love to find and hear great new music but you don't know where to start, let All Songs Considered be your guide. It's NPR's weekly music discussion and discovery podcast with tons of new songs and artists to fall in love with. Hear All Songs Considered in the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're speaking with John Branch about his new book, The Last Cowboys, about the Wright family, a ranching and rodeo crew family down there in southern Utah. You can join the conversation. Do you relate to the Wright story about trying to keep tradition and the family business together? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. With me, John Branch, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter for The New York Times and author of The Last Cowboys, a pioneer family in the New West. Tell us about this family, and more specifically, John Branch, the threat to this way of life. Describe how difficult it is to make a living, to make a go at what they're trying to do there.
Yeah, the you know, Bill Wright, the patriarch here, is hoping to build a cattle operation large enough to sustain however many kids want to join. Typically, it takes about 100 head of cattle to make a living for a couple, for a small family. So if you want a bunch of your boys in it and their families, you may need 1,000 head of cattle. Right now, he's got about 300, and it's been growing. He's in a tricky spot because the land that he has, at least for the winter range, which is what we call Smith Mesa, right outside of Zion National Park, is really surrounded not only by the park but by federal land that is getting more and more pressure on it to be used for recreation. It's getting more and more pressure on it to be conserved. A lot of conservation groups want to buy it up. And you have this encroaching growth from the towns nearby, like St. George, Utah, which is kind of a boom town, mm-hmm. a retirement town and a recreation town. So he kind of feels the world closing in a little bit, and he's on this beautiful little island, and he wants to grow this. So his big dilemma is, how do I grow this and keep this land where we've been doing this for 150 years? Do I need to sell this land and move to someplace with more wide open spaces? Do I need to go to South Dakota or something? He has the luxury in that he has boys that seem to be interested. and that are successful in rodeo. You don't get rich in rodeo, but certainly they make a very good living. You also don't know how long rodeo is going to last because the next ride might be your last. But he has the advantage that he has boys that seem to be willing to do this and seem to be willing to pump in some money to the operation. So he's trying to grow, but he doesn't know exactly where and how he will grow.
Hmm. And ranching life is changing for sure. Large and small ranches, as I understand it, are doing pretty well, but it's the medium-sized ones that are sort of getting left behind, if you will. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, you know, the typical mid-sized ranch that used to support an extended family, those are kind of going away, partly because of the pressures of the West, partly because, like everything else, they kind of get gobbled up by corporations. So what we see is growth on the large end, you know, the kinds of places that have 1,000 or more head of cattle. And we see a little bit of growth on kind of the mom and pop. Let's have 10 head just kind of for our own fun. What you don't see, and it's almost like the shrinking middle class everywhere, you don't see the middle-sized ranch operation, which is exactly where the rights are. And they need to try to get, I think, to the bigger end if it's truly going to support, you know, several of their kids and their families.
So as I understand it, they lease close to 20,000 acres from the federal government. That's still considered sort of the middle of the road, yeah?
Yeah, it's interesting because where they are, you know, the family has about 1,200 acres, which sounds like a ton. Mm-hmm. And it looks like a ton when you're standing on it, except for when you see it in sort of the scale of all the rest of the land. And then they lease the rest, which is about 20,000 acres, mostly from the Bureau of Land Management. And that does – you're right. It sounds like a ton and it goes to the horizon. But in that area, there isn't a lot of plant growth. It is the high desert. You know, if this was someplace where it was just nothing but lush grass, you wouldn't need 20,000 acres to feed these cattle. Mm. But these cattle need a lot of room to spread out because there just isn't a lot of stuff to eat there.
Mm. Let's get Alyssa here. She's calling from Detroit, Michigan to join the conversation. Welcome to the program, Alyssa.
Thank you. Hi, how are you?
Hi, doing well. Go ahead, please.
Well, I just wanted to add, I grew up on summers working on my grandparents' cattle ranch in Texas. And they had a place in north central Texas, and they ran a couple hundred head of cattle or a few hundred head of cattle. And every summer I would go and help with roundups and branding and castrating and dehorning and all those things. And it was just kind of part of my life. I live in Detroit now, so obviously I'm not connected with that. But it was just, you know, it's no longer a working cattle ranch. The land was sold off, but for about 150 years it was the Bachelor Ranch, and and that covered about four different ranches all over Texas. Mm.
Alyssa, thank you so much for the call. You know, as Alyssa was talking, John Branch, I'm thinking, gosh, the great American West, the mystique, the romance, the memories that she had as a child. You can't forget the backbreaking work that's attached to this life. Speak to that element of this and the Wright family that you followed for so many months.
Yeah, it is backbreaking work. Bill Wright is now in his 60s, but I kind of chronicle over the years that I've spent with him, some of the injuries that he's had, you know, lifting bales of hay, trying to lift it up over the side of the truck, and he gave himself a hernia, and he was out of commission for a while. You know, while his boys are out on the rodeo trail, Bill's basically doing this by himself, trying to keep the cattle operation going. And so there have been times where he has been bucked off a horse, for example, and had to basically crawl back and try to get back on the horse and get himself back to his truck. And he's driven home, you know, in the middle of the night and had his wife, Evelyn, at the door saying, "Where have you been?" And he's got a broken shoulder. It is a tough, tough life. And I think Bill feels like, I want to pass this on because it's in our blood. We want to pass this on to our kids, and they seem interested. But he's trying to figure out the timing. His kids are still in rodeo. They're raising young families of their own. He's trying to figure out when is that handoff going to be. And, you know, I think he wants to do right by his family. Is the right thing to do to build this and pass it on? Or are they going to have different interests? Mm-hmm. You know, are they going to want to do something totally different? And so he's in this kind of weird position where he's trying to build something and hand it off, but trying to really figure out, is this what the next generation really wants?
So are they using rodeo as a way to sort of innovate for the future? I mean, again, you said you don't know how long rodeo even might go on in and of itself. But are they using rodeo as a way to sort of fund the ranching and the land and to keep it going for as long as it can?
Absolutely. So Cody, who's the two-time world champion, a few years ago won the big grand prize at the Calgary Stampede. And that grand prize was $100,000. That's like one of the biggest prizes you can get in rodeo. And he turned around and spent that money on cows. And so he has a big chunk of the herd. So Cody has about almost half the herd. A couple of the other boys have bought into the herd a little bit. And they've also been using their rodeo earnings to buy permits from the federal government to give them more space. And they're constantly looking for more and more space to grow this. And that's kind of the dilemma at Smith Mesa, where they're on this island and can't really figure out where to grow. But yeah, the rodeo earnings are going into the ranching operation.
You mentioned Cody Wright. I want to bring him in now from Milford, Utah. He's a two-time world champion saddle bronc rider. Here he is, 2013. This was a ride atop a horse called Lunatic Fringe in Houston, Texas.
Cody Wright, the two-time champion of the world, the 11-time national finalist, the guy that in 2013 won Odessa, Denver, Fort Worth already this year. And Lunatic Fringe is the stud that Bobby's been talking about.
Look at this. Oh, my goodness.
Cody Wright from Milford, Utah now. He's the oldest son of Bill and Evelyn Wright's 13 children and a two-time world champion in professional saddle bronc riding. Cody, what a pleasure to have you. Great to have you with us.
Thank you.
So tell us when you first saddled up on a bronco.
When I first saddled up on a saddle bronc horse, I was probably 15. At high school rodeo is where I kind of got started riding saddle bronc horses.
Yeah, and what was it about it that you loved? You're a two-time champion, world champion. You're sort of it. Your rodeo's king. What was it about it that got in your blood?
You know, well, just. I don't know, the kind of the way of life was kind of the way I was raised, mm-hmm. you know, farming and ranching and riding horses and colts.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it just kind of felt like it kind of went hand in hand, exactly how I stuck with it at first.
So your dad...
I really don't know.
Yeah. Your dad put 20,000 miles on his truck every year, driving you and your brothers to rodeos all over, right? 40 rodeos a year by average?
Yeah, that was probably about how many high school rodeos there was, you know, along with him taking us and going with friends and family.
Yeah.
You know, it probably totaled up to... You know, at least that.
So to quote John Branch in his book, The Last Cowboys, he says, rodeo riding, when done right, it's poetry. When done wrong, it's agony.
That's right. That's why you wonder how you get started.
Yeah. So tell me about the showmanship involved, keeping your toes pointed out, the spurs against the animal. Tell me how you do it.
You know what? You just... A whole lot of practice is where it starts. You know, at first, it seems like it's one of the hardest events to master. But once you have got the hang of it, I don't know if anybody's ever really mastered it.
Let me play this clip from a little documentary that was done on you in 2016. It's Cody Wright and his parents. This is Bill and Evelyn, your mom and dad, talking about all the injuries you've sustained while saddle bronc riding.
Cody's had two broken legs.
Broken ribs when they get squished all the time.
I've broke both tibias and fibias. Used to have rods in both legs.
Broken foot.
Broken ankle when he was in college.
Broken ankle.
I broke my ankle.
Yeah, I did get a concussion.
Clavicle, he broke his clavicle.
Yeah, I broke his clavicle.
My shoulder come out in May. Broke my collarbone in January.
I'm pretty sure he broke his back.
because he's like a bionic man, you know? He's had so much stuff done to him.
Yeah, he knocked his teeth back.
Oh, yeah, he had to have braces for a while.
My goodness. Two broken legs, broken ribs, broken tibia, fibia, rods in your legs, broken foot, ankle, broken clavicle, concussion. I mean, the list goes on. I haven't gotten to a few more of them here. Knocked your teeth out. Ever think your body can't take any more of this? You're ready to hang up your spurs?
Well, I hope not, but you know, I guess there's something you just can't outrun, and that's Father Time, huh? We just keep getting older.
Yeah, I hear you.
I kind of hate that question, but I just like to play it by ear.
Well, Cody Wright, joining us from Milford, Utah, two-time world champion, professional saddle bronc riding. He and his family are ranchers down there in southern Utah. Cody Wright, thank you so much, and good luck to you.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me on, Jane.
Thank you. Let's go to the phone. Steve in Elburn, Illinois. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. I have to say I'm most disturbed to hear what is really a defense or a glorification of rodeo this morning. I have been involved in investigating rodeos since 1993, and I have investigated rodeos from Mexico throughout the United States and into Canada. Rodeo events are not connected to ranching. For instance, bull riding, not a ranch of activity at all, mm-hmm. or steer wrestling,
mm-hmm.
or the wild horse race. We have consistently filmed horses being shocked, including being shocked at the National Finals Rodeo in Las Vegas, which is the World Series of Rodeo. It is supposedly illegal, and yet we film it happening all the time. The injuries and the deaths of animals in rodeos are the most highly kept secret in the industry. Now, rodeo people, contestants, will brag about all the injuries that they've received. They choose to participate. The calf, which is just a few months old, does not choose to participate. That calf is dragged into the arena, is forced into the arena, having their tails oftentimes raked over metal poles. Mm. Having them twisted, being shocked, and they're just trying to escape the arena with their lives. They're
Steve, let me turn to John Branch and ask about your concerns, this glorification of rodeos, John Branch. What about that aspect of the story?
Well, you hear that every once in a while. I've been around a lot of rodeos, and the story here that I'm telling is really a story of tradition, and I'm not trying to defend it. I'm just trying to say this is what's happening. The people that you talk to in rodeo, their defense would be, you know, for example, the bronc horses. Those are horses that are very, very expensive. They're bred to buck. It's not really that different than horse racing, which I understand horse racing has had its own issues also along these lines as well. But they are – it's in the best interest of these people to take great care of these horses. I have not seen – electric cattle prods or anything being used at the rodeos. I've been behind the chutes a lot. I would imagine if you film enough, and especially in the last, if you go back several years, you might see it. I know it's not allowed by the rules, so I'm not sure exactly who's doing it or where it's being done. But my experience has been, having spent a lot of time in the chutes, that these people care for these animals because it's their livelihood. There's certainly a respect among the cowboys and the people who raise these. A respect for the livestock. They care about livestock as much as they care for themselves. Now, certainly, when you're talking about cattle ranchers, I mean, to them, it's a business. You know, they're not naming their cattle and that sort of thing. But I do think there is a healthy respect, and I'm sure that the rodeo people would say we'd like to root out some of those issues just as much as anybody else. It certainly doesn't do their reputation any good.
Not to minimize Steve's point, because much of it is valid. But as a rider, you've said rodeo is a rider's paradise, John Branch.
Yeah, you know, the rodeo cowboys, you know, they're all for the most part people who work on ranches or work around livestock for a living. And so, you know, yeah, some of those traditions will go back 150 years. And, you know, I'm sure people like PETA and other organizations have some issues with the way they treat the animals. But these people have been living this way a long time. And from everything I've seen, there's a healthy respect. I've not seen animals mistreated, and I've been around those chutes a long time.
We are discussing ranching and rodeo in the American West this hour, and you can join the conversation. What's your question for John Branch? His new book is The Last Cowboys, A Pioneer Family in the New West. We'll go out with more music from the soundtrack to the movie The Rider. More with your calls and John Branch after this break. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.
Ophira Eisenberg. Join me on NPR's Ask Me Another as we challenge contestants and celebrities to nerdy word games, music parodies, and punderful trivia. Find us every week on the NPR One app and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about ranching and rodeo this hour, and you can join the conversation. Are you innovating? Got a side hustle going to keep your family thriving, like the Wrights down there in southern Utah? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm joined this hour by John Branch, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter. He's author of the new book, The Last Cowboys, A Pioneer Family in the New West. Let's get to some calls. Renee in Mayaca City, Florida. Hi, Renee. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I'm really enjoying the discussion, and John, it's nice that you're bringing this kind of information to the public about the trials and tribulations ranchers face. We have the same problem here in Florida with a lot of development and a lot of our ranches that are getting bought up and developed. And we've got one tool that's been working very effectively to help keep our ranching families in the business, and that's been the conservation agencies, where, you know, government entities come in and they basically are buying development rights so that the property doesn't get developed and the family can stay on it and own it and continue in the ranching business. So It's been effective, and it would be nice to see that more effective in other states as well to help us all stay in the business.
Hmm. Renee, thank you. Is that something that you've noticed, John, in your reporting?
Yeah, definitely. It's a good point. Mm-hmm. There are conservation groups that have collected enough money to be able to buy, basically, they're basically buying the land, saying you can stay on it, but we're just trying to protect it from developers. The Wrights have talked to people like that as well. I think there's a nervousness about what that means if you're a rancher, what kind of restrictions that might mean. Can you still run X number of cattle on there like you have been, or are they going to place restrictions on that? But it's certainly one of the options to try to keep this land from being developed. The question is, for the ranchers, is that the best option for them?
Renee, thanks so much for the call. From our website, Mark asks, why is it so important that Mr. Wright's boys be the ones who are interested in keeping and growing the ranch? Is it that his daughters aren't involved in the family business, have careers of their own? So, John Branch, what about the women? They're not so visible in your narrative. Tell us about them.
It's a great question, and they are kind of the hidden anchors of these families, because these boys, many of them are spending 250 days a year on the rodeo circuit. And the women are raising families, and they are school teachers. I'm trying to think of what all their jobs are.
Mm-hmm.
Some are staying home and taking care of the kids. A couple are school teachers. One works at the at a big hog farm outside of Milford.
Mm-hmm.
Evelyn is a school teacher, for example. She says she has a magnet on her refrigerator that says, "Behind every rancher is a woman who works in town." They are really the anchors to raising these families. And so it is – for the most part, in this case, the boys that are interested. One of the daughters is married to a top rodeo cowboy herself, Coburn Bradshaw. So it's the Wrights and Coburn. And so Coburn may get involved in it. But yeah, the narrative does really focus more on the men. But I think at its heart, and especially through Evelyn and through Cherie, who is Cody's wife, they really make these families. They really are the glue that hold these families together.
Mark, thanks for the question. Let's go back to the phones. Rad in Minocqua, Wisconsin. Hi, Rad. Welcome to On Point.
Hi. Thanks. Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I am a horseman on just a little 5-acre horse farm, 7-acre horse farm. I love the squeaky saddles and all the cowboy lore and art. I'm also used to be a conservationist. I went to the University of Montana and I've been on some of these big ranches, and I have some ranching friends and really understand just the love of the lifestyle and the beauty. The paradox of it all, someone touched upon rodeo, and I do agree. I mean, I've been to a horse clinic where we talk about the horse's feelings, but then you let some little terrified cow out and throw a rope around its neck and yank it off its feet as it's running full speed for amusement. And that used to be a way of life. You were learning to take care of the cows, and certainly people brand cattle and give them vaccines, and that's part of it on a working ranch, but rodeo is for pleasure. The other thing I think that just is in our changing world, as we become more informed, we see that, you know, the landscape's changing. We see what sort of effects cattle grazing has on natural biodiversity. And I wonder, are we at a point, this is my question to the author, are we at a point where, you know, really a historical ranching way of life is something that doesn't really fit in with our modern society and modern values, and it is really the perpetuation of that lifestyle, something that of course the people who've been doing it for 150 years might love to do, and any of us who had an opportunity to just be a part of it and be touched by the magic could be attracted to, but is it really time for it to fade off into the sunset?
Interesting question, Red. Thank you. John Branch.
Yeah, it is a great question, which is, it kind of harks to the title of the book itself, The Last Cowboys. You know, I do wonder, and I wonder now more than ever as I drive around the West and you see these, you know, along these two-lane roads and these barbed wire giant ranges with nobody on them except for maybe a few cattle and maybe a few horsemen or a few cowboys working the cattle. You do wonder if 100 years from now, 50 years from now, 30 years from now, we will still have these kind of ranching operations. Will it all be overseas? Will somehow our food supply change to sort of render these obsolete? It does feel like it's something that's fading. It's interesting, for example, though, when you talk about the niches, I mean, he's obviously spent a lot of time in Montana. You go places in the West and you see these kind of ranchers and ranches all over the place. Rodeo still has, I think, through the Pro Rodeo Cowboys Association, the PRCA, there are still 600 or 700 rodeos every year. So for people that think this is dying, I think what's happened a little bit is that it is perhaps fading, but I also think it's sort of lost its place in popular culture. And so people aren't quite aware of just how many thousands, tens of thousands, a million people are very deeply involved in this work and how many rodeos are still going on every weekend across the West.
You're really a sports reporter at heart. I mean, for the New York Times, put that into broader cultural context for us. And really for a certain population, rodeos and rodeoing, somewhat like NASCAR, I would suspect, right?
It is a little bit. You know, it's like any sport that you just didn't really realize exists. I mean, it could be like, you know, gaming, for example, video gaming. You know, there's probably a lot of people that don't realize that there are sellout arenas filled with kids video gaming and watching this, and how many millions of people are viewing this online. It's just a niche world that until you kind of dip into it, you wouldn't even know happens. And especially if you don't live in the West, you may not realize this world still exists in all its glory and all the nostalgia that we've wrapped around it. It still happens. Now, is it going to keep happening? That's the great question, as your listener pointed out.
To Rad's first point, I wonder if you lose ranching and you lose this way of life. I mean, it seems so much part of our American identity, our American ethos, you know. I mean, are we going to lose something valuable to our sense of selves if that goes away?
Yeah, you do wonder. It is part of our culture, you know, for all its warts or whatever. You know, you go overseas and people will ask you, do you know any cowboys? You know, there's still a cowboy mystique about America and about the American West. There's still something to be said about when you see a person in a cowboy hat. Certainly all of our popular culture in the last 60, 80 years, the American West has been a huge theme. And maybe it's fading a little bit, but now you see things like this book and the movie that you mentioned, The Rider. Maybe there's a little bit of nostalgia for it, or at least maybe we're at least trying to sort of pencil in a little bit, like, this is the world as it stands now. You guys are somewhat familiar with this world because of you know, the cultural and pop cultural references throughout our lifetimes. And now here we are at this moment, and which way is it turning?
Here's May in Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, May. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. I'm a native of West Texas, and I have Lipan Apache and early Tejano ranching heritage from Texas. And I grew up really close to the Four Sixes Ranch near Lubbock. And I'm always curious if the ranching families, when they're talking about struggling to hold on to their public grazing rights and being rearranged by public land disputes, like if they ever consider the indigenous people that were displaced from the land that their family has had for so many generations. Like, if now they're going through those struggles, do they consider that? Do they talk about the indigenous people?
That's a good question, May. Thank you. John Branch.
Yeah, I've not had that conversation with the Wrights. I mean, certainly Mormon history has a lot to do with it in that area. There were a lot of very famous and horrible episodes with Native Americans when the Mormons arrived, just like when a lot of people arrived from the West, the European settlers. You know, she brings up a good point, and I don't know, you know, it's like anything else. It's like, you know, should Cody Wright, who we just had on the phone, is he responsible for somehow fixing the ills of what happened 150 years ago or 100 years ago? This book doesn't explore that. This is not a history book. It's a story of today. And I think these people are living very much in the moment. I think I'll leave it at that.
Here's Dylan in Ipswich, South Dakota. Hi, Dylan. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I'm just calling to say I'm a 25-year-old farmer rancher, and to be a farmer rancher in South Dakota, most of us and my age, we have to go out and we still have to pursue other careers outside of the farming and ranching to make ends meet.
What do you do besides farming, Dylan?
I'm actually a small business owner. Mm-hmm. I do manufacturing, agricultural repairs to tractors and equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And I sell steel and do welding.
So just to stay financially viable, John Branch, there's Dylan in South Dakota. Mm-hmm. Can't just farm, can't just ranch. It's hard and becoming harder.
It's becoming harder, for reasons, you mentioned it at the top, things like even climate change and the drought. The drought has thrown off the feed, which is throwing off the cycles of the mm-hmm. cows. So things are less predictable than they even were a few years ago. The things with the federal lands, you have these permits and they get renewed every once in a while. And the worries are, how many animals will they say I can put on it next time it gets renewed? Maybe I can put 100 animals on it now, but they're going to come back and say, okay, now it's only 50. Now what do I do? So there's a lot of unease about that. And it's especially true in the West, in places like where they are in Southwest Utah, where there's a lot of pressure to either conserve the land or to open it up even further to recreation. And so there's kind of this Venn diagram of who gets to use the land, and those are all pressures. So, for example, the Wrights, Bill Wright has a background in doing a lot of other kinds of work, including concrete work. One of the Wright boys has kind of taken over his concrete business, but he's also a rodeo cowboy, but he needs to make ends meet, so he does both. Cody's at the level that he can do nothing but a rodeo, but he's also 40 years old and wondering what's next. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's kind of an old guy in the mm-hmm. rodeo world, mm-hmm. and so they all need to figure out what's happening either simultaneously to keep food on the table, or what's going to happen after my successful rodeo career, whenever that could end.
Back to the phones, Patrick in Huntington, Vermont. Hi, Patrick. Glad you called.
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make a few comments about the situation in the West with the cowboy lifestyle. It's in my travels, I've found very much alive and well. And I've been a farrier for the past 40 years, recently retired, and I've been involved a lot with horses and horsemen since I was 2 years old. And one of the things that's kind of disturbing is that I find that in present times, people want to embrace the new, but they want to throw out the old. And keeping the old ways and the old ways of living in the Western lifestyle is not something that should be taken lightly in terms of having it pass. Mm-hmm. If one explores it a lot, you will find that even though there are a lot of big ranches out west, that and not that many people seem to be employed there, it's still a very thriving thing. It's a way of life.
Way of life. Yeah, that's a good way to put it, Patrick. Thank you very much. John Branch, we're coming up on the clock here, and I guess I just ask you how this experience reporting on this family, this way of life, this this part of the world impacted you. What was this story like for you, getting to know these people so intimately?
Yeah, I mean, these people are as humble as any people I've ever been around. They're as hardworking and tough as any people I've been around. I cover a lot of professional athletes. There's nobody tougher than a rodeo athlete. and in many ways is as tough as a rancher. You know, they take the days as they come, and you know, I'm getting ready to fly back to California this afternoon. I'll fly right over the top of this country, and it'll look totally empty. But if you go and look in the spaces and in the spaces between, as they say, you'll find many, many people living this way and trying to make a go of it here in the 21st century.
And what's the lesson, the takeaway as far as, you know, sort of the broader cultural context, the question about federal land, about urbanization, about tourism, drought, all of these things that are changing and transforming this way of life and, frankly, the land itself?
Yeah, I think the, you know, people like the Wrights have to figure it out. And so a lot of people have, you know, the urbanization, a lot of people have had their kids just go to the big city and get and take jobs. And that way of life, that farm sort of dries up and goes away. You drive around the West and you see many, many towns that you can just picture were once vibrant. There's the beautiful brick post office and the banks and the general store that are now boarded up and nothing but a dot on the map anymore. Those places are going away. People like the Wrights are trying to hold out. And they're trying to say, can we fit in this world? The world is changing around us. Is there still a place for us here?
And Cody's children, the next generation, what are they thinking? Are they leaving? Are they staying?
They're staying. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because a lot of, you know, the next generation does move on. But this family seems very committed to doing what the family has been doing. So his three oldest boys, Ryder, Roper, and Stetson, you can't make up these names. I say Larry McMurtry can't make up these names any better than the Wrights did. They're all now professional rodeo cowboys themselves, ages roughly 23 down to 18, and doing very, very well for themselves in the rodeo world. And I think they're helping a lot on the ranch when they're home. Mm.
Well, John Branch has been our guest this hour, Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times sports reporter, author of The Last Cowboys, A Pioneer Family in the New West. He won the Pulitzer Prize for feature writing in 2013. You can find an excerpt of The Last Cowboys at our website, onpointradio.org. John Branch, thank you so much. Great to have you with us.
My pleasure, Jane. Thank you.
You can continue the conversation, listeners. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. On Point is produced by Anna Bauman, Brian Hardzinski, Eileen Imada, Stefano Katsonis, Hillary McQuilkin, Allison Poley, Catherine Proctor, Tanya Raleigh, and James Ross. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. Thank you.